Welcome to the Ed Milet Show. This podcast is for those who want to do more, see more, and be more.
Welcome back to Max Out, everybody. I'm Ed Milet, and today's a very special program and one that I've worked very hard to put together for you because I wanted to introduce you to this incredibly inspirational person to my right. You know, I've often had people on the program, as you know, that have incredibly inspiring words. But every so often, I introduce you to somebody who's just an inspiring being, an inspiring person. And the man to my right absolutely fits that description. And so, with no further ado, let me introduce my good friend, Eric LeGrand. Eric, thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Ed. It's truly, truly a blessing.
Welcome to California.
Yeah, California. Hey, man. It's California life, man. I like it.
Welcome to the beach. So everybody that's watching on YouTube, you immediately can see that Eric is in a wheelchair. If you're listening to this on audio, we're going to describe this incredible story to you, but it's one of the most remarkable stories that I've been following for the better part of, you know, going on 9 years. Yeah. From the minute your injury took place to today. I've tracked your progress, and I think you're, by the way, one of the greatest speakers in the world too, which people are going to hear about soon. But why don't we get right into it, because I think most people may have seen you before but may not know the story. So take us back to where your life changed, which was October 16th 2010. Your life was altered forever on that day, correct? So tell everybody what happened that day.
Well, we were in the fourth quarter at MetLife Stadium playing the Army Black Knights. And I remember we had just tied the game up 17-17. So I was on the kickoff team in my head. I'm like, let me run down the field, make a big play, get our defense out of here, get a quick three and out, and get the ball back to our offense so they can have a 2 minute drill to score. That's my mode going down on the field. And that game, I was facing a double team. So as soon as the ball's kicked off, two guys came to block me. But on that particular kickoff, I was able to split right through them, and I had a good 30, 40-yard head start on this guy that I knew I was going to make a tackle on. And as I'm running down the field, I'm saying, do I want to use my head or do I want to use my shoulder? And everybody knows when you play football, if you're going to use your head, you got to see what you hit. Mm-hmm. I said, this is going to be a big collision. Let me use my shoulder, keep my head out to play. Mm-hmm. In the video, you'll see my teammate actually got there about a half a second before I did, and he tripped the guy up. When a guy got tripped up, his body twirled in the air. And as I put my head down, thinking it wasn't going to be in the tackle at all, it would be just my shoulder. The angle changed, and the crown of my head went right into the back of his shoulder blade. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, I was laying on the ground paralyzed, and my life changed right there. I had no idea what would happen to me.
So, a picture of this, everybody. You're playing for Rutgers, one of the top football programs in the country at the time. And you're a big man. Mm-hmm. So, you're talking about a collision at high speed. Everyone picture this. What were you, about 6'2", 270 at the time?
Yeah, about 270, 275 running down. Yep, and they said it was like Usain Bolt. The scientifics on it. Usain Bolt running full speed into a brick wall. That was a collision.
My goodness. So you're hurt. You're on the ground. Do you know immediately something's wrong?
I knew right away that something went wrong because I couldn't move. But then the most, I guess, frightening part about it was I couldn't breathe. Mm. So immediately I paralyzed my diaphragm, but I thought I had knocked the wind out of myself maybe, and I thought I had a full body stinger because I had a stinger on my shoulder before where it went completely numb and I wasn't able to move it. Mm-hmm. I said, I just did that to my body. But I remember the trainers come running out. They're like, is it your head or is it your neck? And I was just like, I can't breathe. Mm-hmm. And then Cosciano comes out and he looks down at me and goes, E, you have to pray right now. And when he says that to me, I'm thinking, this is it. My life is over because I can't move. I can't breathe. And now my coach is telling me I have to pray.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course, I'm praying for a gasp of air or anything, but in my back of my head, I'm like, my life is over. I'm not going to lie to you, Ed. At one point, I did close my eyes, and I said, God, take me at ease.
Did you really?
I did. I closed my eyes on that ground. I said, God, take me in. Mm. Nothing happened, so I instantly opened my eyes back up and started panting again because I was nervous. But at this time, they're putting a board under me now to get me onto the cart. And when they lifted me up, somehow I caught a gasp of air for a second. So then I said to myself, okay, I did knock the wind out of myself. Everything will be okay.
Wow. Yeah. So while you're laying there in front of thousands and thousands of people, you literally closed your eyes and said, Lord, take me.
I did. No, I remember I said, this is it. I can't move. I can't breathe. This is going to be the end of my journey.
Were you in? So you couldn't breathe. And by the way, when this happened, this was national news everywhere, right, at the time. But if we could go back just for a second, because I think one of the things you do, Eric, that's so magnificent, because you have such an infectious spirit. Mm-hmm. So does your mom, by the way, who we'll talk about later. Mom does too. But you have this thing about you that's so calm. And so I want to know, were you this way before this injury? Were you always sort of predisposed to be this sort of, I don't know if I'd call you serene or chill, but is that true of you?
I always loved to be a people person. Mm. Love to make people smile, love to make them laugh. Didn't matter who you are. I was always that guy where, you know, you see him, he's gonna put a smile on your face. It didn't matter. What race, boy, girlfriend, it didn't matter. I was always that guy that wanted to make you smile, and people loved to be around me. I'm not gonna lie, and it was, kind of took to that because I liked to be around people. I was class clown at times.
Yeah.
The jokester, but when it was time to, you know, clicking on and be a serious guy, I knew when it was time to work, it was time to work, and when it was time to play, you have fun.
And you knew in that moment laying there, this is not a normal time. Were you in physical pain other than the not breathing?
I get that question a lot. Did I feel anything? And at the time, I didn't feel anything at all. I had fractured my neck so much, you know, that I went right into my spinal cord and it did the damage and I couldn't feel a thing.
So it's going through your mind first is, Lord, take me. Then it's like, well, I'm here. I can breathe. I might as well stay, right? Mm-hmm. Coach tells you to pray. How long between when the injury took place, do you know, until you were off the football field?
7 minutes.
7 minutes.
7 minutes. That's, I give so much credit to my trainers and that whole staff. I think that's why I'm doing so well now. Mm. They got me on and off that field into the ambulance and out of that stadium in 7 minutes. Mm. And I think if I would have been out there longer and stuff, there would have been so many more internally, you know, just damage done.
So what happens then? You go off the field, you get into an ambulance, what takes place now?
I remember I tried to give the thumbs up first, and it just felt like there was 1,000 pounds in a block laying on my hand. Couldn't move it.
So you're trying to come off and just let everyone know you're okay.
Couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Get into the back of the ambulance, and they put an oxygen mask on me, and I'm not gonna lie, I was ignorant to the fact of how an oxygen mask works. I'm thinking, they put this on, I'm able to go. Mm. I took that deep breath in, and I was not able to go. And I'm not gonna lie, I freaked myself out so much that I passed out.
You did?
I passed out the whole ride to the ambulance. I only remember waking up when I got there. Mm. I opened my eyes and I see a bunch of lights in the hallway as I'm getting carted down the hallway. I blacked out. Mm. I woke up again and now I'm in a room filled with a bunch of doctors and nurses. It sounded like they were speaking a different language to me. Mm. You know, what was going on? I blacked out. I woke up one more time and I was in the room by myself with all the monitors and sounds going beep, beep. And that's all I remember until Wednesday. This injury happened on Saturday. That's all I remember.
Yeah. You were you a praying person then? Just curious.
Yeah, I always had good faith. I always believed in God. And mm-hmm. I'm a lot closer now.
Are you?
Yeah. Absolutely. But I always believed and I always prayed. And, you know, and it just was going along my journey as a regular 20-year-old, you know, Division I athlete. And
I must tell you, as you're telling me this story, my heart's racing. Like, it's scary for me to hear, and I wasn't there. I appreciate you being so honest about that, because I think, you know, there's a fascination. People think, what happens in these moments in someone's life where they know life is never going to be the same again? And I appreciate you, you know, being willing to share that so much. You end up waking up then. Mm-hmm. On that Wednesday,
yes,
and someone has to probably at that point, I assume, deliver news to you, or what takes place then?
Well, I knew that I was injured. I didn't know the extent of my injury, mm-hmm. and I remember my mom coming up to me and saying, "Eric, let me know when you want to talk." But at the time, I'm not gonna lie, I was getting just bombarded with posters and postcards and people visiting me that mm-hmm. I kind of wasn't focusing on the injury. I was focusing on talking to people and. Yeah, I haven't seen people I haven't seen since middle school and high school were coming up to visit me. Mm. And guy, it was national news, so you know, like the Giants came over, Tom Coughlin came over to see me, sent over all the rookies that year, Jason Pierre-Paul and those guys.
Wow.
Came and visited me, and then Andy Reid was with the Eagles.
Yeah.
He came over, so in the back of my head, I'm like, this is perfect. They're gonna know who I am when I get back on that field.
Really?
About to be a first round pick and everything. This is before I knew, of course, what was going on.
Wow.
I was amped. And I was fired up to see a bunch of people that it took my mind away from everything that was going on.
Interesting. That is interesting. So when do you talk, is it mom who tells you this is the situation or was it a doctor?
I would say, no, it was my mom. It was about a week into it.
A
week into it. And because I said, it was nonstop every day.
It was the biggest story in the country at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just sports news, but national news at the time. It was the dominant story on all media, all networks.
I was getting people from China and Australia were sending me postcards and stuff. So every day we were just going through that. And I was sleeping a lot during the day because I wasn't sleeping at night. I was very terrified at night, just the terrors of the night and not being able to, you know, control what was going on and having to trust other people. Mm. But when I finally realized what had happened to me, you know, I said, you know what? Can't focus on football right now. I want to focus on getting my life now. Like, I definitely have to graduate. because I'm not going to be playing football anymore. Wow. And I started thinking about my life. What am I going to do? Because my whole life has been football. And I'm like, I want to be back on my feet. What do I got to do in rehab? And what am I going to do afterwards so I can support myself?
Well, you're already processing that information
right
there.
Right away, when I realized I wasn't going to be able to play football right now, I'm like, well, what's next? Like, this is all I know. So it just came to my head, like, of course, immediately was rehab, getting back, you know, on my feet. And I was like, that's going to come. Like, I've been grinding my whole life. I know what the weight room's like. I'm thinking, you know, you just go in there and you work and you'll be back on your feet. You know, I didn't know the extent of, you know, all the nerves and stuff. Like, I know now. Like, I'm a scientist now, but I was just thinking, all right, I go in the gym and I grind for whatever amount of time, I'll be up on my feet.
See, this is interesting to me. This speaks a lot to you because I've known you from a distance, but now I'm knowing you. Everyone should just hear this. First off, just give you some perspective on whatever you think you had a bad day. Yeah. We were just talking about off camera about Israel Del Toro, who's been on my show and who was burned 80% of his body. And on that show, I said, so you think you've had a bad day? Really? Compared to what? You think you're having a bad time right now? Really? Compared to what? But what's so impressive to me, because I know you, you're super humble. There's no false front here. The fact that you went into, I'm scared, but you immediately went into solution. You immediately went into the grind. And that's a lesson for everybody. Like, when you're going through some of the worst things in the world, what people have a tendency to do is focus on the problem and not the solution. And there's so much power. I've said this in some of my videos about, it's easy for me to say, you did it. But to start pouring your focus and energy into the solution, not the problem itself. The other thing I want to say to you, just back at you, that I didn't think of until you just said it, was that not only was this a catastrophic life change, but your whole plan was now gone. You're not going to play in the NFL. I'd not really processed that a dream went away that day. And a lot of people can relate to that. Their first dream's gone away. First dream relationship, dream business, dream career. It's gone. You immediately moved into the transition phase of that.
Now, I give that a lot of credit to Coach Yano and our staff at Rutgers, because we were, I was telling you off camera, I felt like we were going through the military, but it was always about the solution. Here's the problem. How do you handle it? And what are you going to do forward afterwards? And we had a lot of life lessons that Coach Yannon used to tell us. What if you get fired from your job? You got to move on. You got to support your family. You don't sit there and focus on the problem. You look toward the solution. So my head, my mental was trained. I was trained right away. Like I said, all right, I'm not playing football no more. What's next? How do I have to handle this? How do I get it done? I've been trained to think that.
That's incredible. Could you tell him a little bit, Coach Schiano, those of you that may not know, it's Greg Schiano, right? Coach has been at Rutgers. He's been in the NFL. And he's sort of, I think, probably known as sort of a pretty serious, intense dude. But you and your mom were both sharing that not only did he help sort of groom you almost to be prepared for something like this, although you can never be completely prepared, as you've just said, but he was really... he was there for you in ways most people wouldn't know post the injury. Would you be willing just to share with people a little bit about that?
Absolutely, I would love to, because Coach Schiano, he's not for everybody. He's going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. But the people that he can work with, that can get in his head, he turns into monsters. Like, I'm talking about good monsters, mentally, physically, and whatever you need to handle, you're going to go do it at 100%, and you're going to crush it. And that's why, like I said, not everyone's built for that. Not everyone in this world, and that's why if he gets a bad rap, oh, he's too hard here, or he pushed me this way, he said this to me. I was his perfect type of student. I can handle it. When you tell me I'm doing something wrong, I take that responsibility that I'm letting somebody down. I can't do that. I gotta, you know, go forward. I gotta handle my business. So I'm not letting, you know, other people down. And that's what he did with his aunt. Is just, you know, training us in the, it's 120 degrees on the turf. Just had a 2.5 hour practice run, 22 gases afterwards. Now he's got us put our face in the turf and breathing in all of that, like stuff like that. Like, what am I doing right now? What am I doing with my life? It's all for the mental, just preparing you for life. And when tough situations happen, what are you going to do? Fold, or do you look to the solution and handle it? And
great, that's
what he did. And when he recruited me, he said that he treats all his kids like his sons. And there was nothing more that didn't show, like, that didn't show that as when I got hurt.
How so?
Oh, man. He was on the phone hours right after the game, making sure I was in the best hospital, making sure I was in, taking care of the best way. I come up to the hospital at night, 11 o'clock at night, to let my mom go to the hotel sleep. Stay with me for till 2, 3 in the morning.
Wow.
And then be back at the Hale Center, where it was a practice center, you know, for us at 7 a.m., things of that nature. And then when I got transferred to Kessler, He made sure I had everything. He had the satellite dish installed on top of my room. Whoa. My flat screen TV in there. They even built me a fat end. Whatever I needed, I had it. And it was because of Coach Yano, Tim Brennan, who was our athletic director, and everybody at Rutgers. It was incredible.
What a great lesson on leaders, man. You're like this treasure chest of info. Nah. Like both you and the people you've observed. But like, I love what you said. Like, great leaders aren't concerned about being for everybody.
Exactly.
And when you're trying to please everybody, you end up leading nobody. And then he was there for you when it mattered, though. Like, to me, the picture of the coach, you know, who's still running that program, coming and relieving your mom at 11 o'clock at night and staying there with you. You know, there weren't cameras there. Nobody knew that was taking place. And so what an incredible lesson from him. I want to ask you first, and then we're going to go backwards, because you've told me your life before this prepared you. But if there was one thing during that time that you learned or that you took a lesson away from, either about yourself or life, what would you say that it was?
It actually was patience. Everyone's still instant gratification me. I always want everything now. I want to, you know, if I something, I can always work for a goal, but I want to start it now. I want to do it now. I want to do this, I want to do that now. I've learned with this injury, you have to have patience. Sometimes everything's not going to go the way that you want it, and sometimes there are things that you keep, that are out of your control. And sometimes when it's out of your control, it can build you up and frustrate you so much, because I told you the way I was if something was put in front of me, I handled it.
Yeah.
You go in the weight room, you handle it. You go on a practice field, you do the little things to get better. With this injury, sometimes it's just not like that. You can't just go to ride a bike and, you know, start getting better. You can't walk on the treadmill all the time and just get better. So I've learned to be able to be patient when things don't go your way. And I get so frustrated, be able to be in that moment and be, okay, it's not going to work today. But don't get disturbed from the goal at hand. You got to stay focused on that task at hand and still handle it. Come back the next day.
What a great lesson. I want to ask you something about that, though, because I think sometimes when people hear patience, because the right people know that means stay in the grind until you win.
Exactly.
The wrong people think, oh, I'm being patient. I don't have to be after it right now. Right? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost an excuse not to grind. So you were simultaneously patient, but you went right after your PT, right? Right after therapy to get better. And tell them a little bit, because one of the things I comment on to you was you're mobile.
Yes.
You know, you broke C3 and 4, correct?
Yes.
So very severe injury, but you've got a lot of mobility now in your shoulders and in your neck, and you move very well, better than I even assumed. You attributed that to the immediate grind you went into on rehab, correct?
Yes, I do.
And they had you up moving. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, when I first got hurt, I was pretty much stiff to a board. The doctor pretty much said I was almost going to be a vegetable, you know?
Okay.
I said, sad to say it in that terms, but that's what they pretty much said, and I was really able to turn my head to the left and to the right, and I was on a ventilator, couldn't breathe on my own.
Wow.
I had a feeding tube in my stomach, couldn't eat solid foods, and you know, my told me I'd never walk again. Like, life was flipped and turned upside down. But immediately I went to, this is going on now. How do I get this feeding tube out of me? How do I breathe on my own? How do I, you know, just start doing the other things that I needed to do? How do I walk again? And when they're like, all right, we're gonna go do this, this, and that, I'm like, all right, let's get started with it. And that's what it was just that grind that I've learned, like I said, being patient, because not everything's gonna happen, you know, right away.
Did you want to quit?
I never wanted to quit. It's been like that work, and I've had little victories as I've been able to come off the ventilator 5 weeks after my injury.
5 weeks after, wow.
I was able to eat a full Thanksgiving meal with my family that Thanksgiving after a month and a half of being injured, and told me I'll be on a feeding tube for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And then I remember it was the Super Bowl party of 2011. I had it up at Kessler, and we had a bunch of family and friends over. And at that time, I wasn't able to move my shoulders yet, but at that party, I went like a little bit like that. And they were like, Eric, did you just move your shoulder? I'm like, I think so. Now you see, I'm moving around. And that's all just from going to physical therapy, controlling what I can control. And I always say, because I always had that athlete mindset, so I go in there, it's like attacking a workout. And sometimes I do feel bad for the 55-year-old woman who never worked out in her life, who has a spinal cord injury, and now has to go to the gym 5 days a week, and she's never experienced that. I said, I had an advantage. I've been doing this my whole life. I've been grinding my whole life. I know those dog days, what it's like, and days that you don't want to get up and do it, but you got to push yourself to do it. So I kind of went into that mindset of, all right, now it's not working to get on the field and get to the NFL, to now working to get back on my feet and get my life back.
This is unreal. Like, you're so mentally tough, but the way
that's why I said my mental toughness.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like I can handle anything. It's weird to say that, and it's like a humble brag, but
yeah,
mentally, I feel like, you know, whatever life throws at me, I'm ready to handle.
Yeah, you've kind of proven that, brother. Mm-hmm. So, like, where's that come from? Is there some stuff early in your life that prepped you for something like this, do you think?
I would say, as a young kid, I always tell my story, how I've learned different core values. Mm-hmm. Commitment was the first one. I remember being 10 years old, playing in the park with my friends, and I remember I was the best one on the football team. We had practice. One day, my mom comes from work and comes to the park. Eric, come on, we gotta go to practice, blah, blah, blah. I remember yelling to her, Ma, I ain't going to practice today. Staying here with my friends in the park. You met my mom.
Yes.
Comes in the park, grabs me by my arm, drags me out, throws me in the back seat on the way home the whole time. Blah, blah, blah. Are you kidding me? Who do you think you are? Mm. Commit to something, then you see it out. I don't care how good you are, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And from 10 years old, now I'm 28. I still remember that. Mm. So now when I got to high school, I got offered a scholarship as a freshman for Marcus to play.
And what?
Yeah, I got offered after playing 3 games as a freshman. They were looking at somebody else's film in my town, and they saw me. They're like, who's that? And they're like, yeah, he's a freshman. And they came right over, and they wrote on this paper to my coach that this date on as a, when he's a junior, he'll be offered a scholarship.
That's amazing.
So I remember that sophomore year, the seniors always have to pick someone to go turn on the water before and after practice. We have to climb down into a sewer. I'm saying, this sewer was disgusting. Guess who they picked? You know, I may be the best one on the team. Mm. Who's in the sewer turning on the water before practice? Mm. And after practice is over, dead tired, I'm climbing in that sewer, turn, waiting for everyone to get their drink and turn on. So I learned humility at a very early age. Mm. And then once I got to Rutgers, one of the biggest things was I got my position changed so much my freshman year. I came in, was recruited as a linebacker. First day of training camp, I get moved to nose guard. Mm. 2 weeks into the season, our second string defensive end goes down. I get moved to defensive end. Our fullbacks weren't performing the way they wanted to midway through the season. I got moved to fullback.
Whoa.
From there, I played 2 weeks at fullback, moved back to defensive end, and then at the end, I finished the year out there and then back to nose guard. It was just a whirlwind. I questioned, do I love the game of football? Mm. What am I doing with my life? And is this what my journey is supposed to be about? And once I kind of figured that out, like, you know, everything is going to fall into the right place. Mm. These are the things that in my life that I learned before my injury that kind of set me up to when I was going through this, and what I learned when I was playing there at Rutgers, I can handle it.
Yeah.
Mentally, I can handle it.
Yeah, you personify commitment and humility, both, because you're confident, but you have a humble way about you. Mm-hmm. Speaking of mom, because I don't think people achieve what you've achieved without having people help them in life, right? And obviously Coach Shiana was there, but your mother's a remarkable woman. Yes. Both personally, when you meet her, she's got this infectious spirit. I've told her, you're a great motivational speaker. I'm pretty sure your mom is better than both you and I. But her dedication to you, right, has been, it's actually a beautiful story. And we would make a mistake in this interview if we didn't point out to everybody who's trying to make their dream happen or come back from the setback that it's okay to get help. It's okay to have people around you. I'm sure, you know, you talked about the great people at Rutgers and Coach, but what about mom? How important has mom been for you?
From the beginning, raising my sister and I, who's 11 and a half years older than me, as a single parent, you know, my dad was around. My dad lived in town next to me. Came to all my games, things that brought me lunch, you know, if I ever needed anything. Mm-hmm. But my mom raised me. Mm. My mom turned me into who I am and just taught me respect to all people. Like I said, commitment, being humble. Like, if you're good, okay, let them talk about you. You don't talk about yourself. Mm. And I truly believe that. If you're that good, so you don't got to brag about yourself. Mm. Other people will do that for you. Mm. And just always on top of me, making sure I'm not in trouble, making sure I'm doing my homework, just going through the guidance counselor, making sure I'm doing this to get into Rutgers, my SATs, getting a tutor when she didn't have the money to get us a tutor. Wanted me and my sister to experience a vacation, so she would skip paying bills so my sister and I can experience a vacation.
Wow.
When I was younger. Stuff like that makes you realize, I remember coming home when I was seven, 8 years old and the lights being off, but not realizing why they were off until I got older. Mm-hmm. I remember when that hot water wasn't working and taking showers with the when you had to boil the water and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I remember those days now as I get older, her sacrificing what she could. Me. Yeah, and every new system there was, Xbox, Dreamcast, PlayStation, her not paying some bills so I can have a Christmas. Wow. You know, as a kid, you don't realize it because you just see it there. Mm-hmm. But as you get older, you realize that commitment. Then just the commitment that she has to me now to making sure I have the best care, I'm doing well, and I'm trying to support us. And my goal in life is to get better and get back on my feet. So she can live a life that she does, that she wants to, and not have to support her son all the time.
I love that.
Let me support her.
Yeah, and one of the ways that you're doing that is through your speaking. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I'm a speaker. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I do, and I feel like the most effective people, it's their being that moves you, not just their words. And if you have a company or you have an organization and you want people's perspective to instantly change, and you want to see someone who's come back from really difficult times, I picture this man, this huge man, full speed running down the field. When that ball was kicked, little did you think several seconds from now, your life was about to change. And I picture this man laying there and coach saying, you better pray. And you actually then praying to actually be taken. And then to be sitting with you now this many years later speaks to your strength and obviously your commitment and your humility as well, but your incredible work ethic, your incredible patience, this whole story of you, all of it fits other areas. And having strong people, your mother is a strong woman, but she has this huge spirit too about her. Let's go. So if you want someone to speak, by the way, before we move off of this, you can go to Eric's on letsengage.com. We'll put that on the screen right now. And also to your Instagram, right? Is that where you'd want them to go?
You can go to my Instagram, EricLegrand52. I also have my own website, okay. EricLegrand52.com. And I feel like I was put here to do bigger things than a game of football. And well, that's through speaking, showing them my stories and sharing my stories with people to help them overcome adversity. And they see me. I was, I'm just a kid, a regular kid from the suburbs, small town, Avondale, New Jersey, but was guided in the right direction to help other people. Mm-hmm. And like, if I could show them that through my speaking and my stories, this is what I'm here for. Just, if I would have been in the NFL, if you followed the NFL, you probably would have known me. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like I have a bigger cause. I could be internationally known just to help people get through their lives in adversity. And they, like I said, look at what he's been through and look what he's doing. Why can't I do that?
Yeah.
Why can't I do what I want to do if all odds are against this guy? Mm-hmm. He finds a way to do it. As you know, as I travel with my friends, I go out in Miami, I go out in Vegas, I do everything, you know, somebody from the age of 20 to 30 would do, you know?
Oh yeah, you do. Yeah, exactly. Your mom's telling me that, so.
So people are like, wow, he's living his life. He's still doing that in the circumstances that he's in. Wow, why can't I get him? Why can't I start that business? Mm-hmm. Why can't I leave that 9-to-5 job and try to do something that I want to do? Why can't I get my family life back together? You know, why? This, look at what I'm going through and handle it each and every day, and you realize life ain't that bad. I've met some people now along the way that have inspired me because they didn't have that same support system that I have. Mm-hmm. They don't have the opportunities to come here with you and mm-hmm. share their story. And I don't ever take any of this for granted because I know that. I have a friend, Ingrid, who broke her neck in a car accident, who's, unfortunately, unfortunately, she's still living in the projects of Jersey City, mm-hmm. and with seven people in a one-bedroom house. Oh my. The elevator breaks for 3 months of the year, she says all the time. Can't even get out of the house. Meanwhile, I'm at home. I got a brand new house that was built for me. I got a pimped out black minivan. Like, how bad do I really have? I got a great mom, a great family that brings me here, does this with me. Meanwhile, she can't even get out of her own house for some fresh air. Mm-hmm. I had a friend, Jermaine, who died from cancer. He has a cancerous tumor in his lower spinal cord, and it spread to his brain, and unfortunately, he passed away, but he didn't have the support that I was wearing the same clothes 4 days in a row. Mm-hmm. My grandma was cooking home-cooked meals and stuff. Mm-hmm. I met his mom once and his dad twice, maybe, during his stay at Kessler. We were there for 5 months together, and like I said, he passed away 2 weeks right after I got out of Kessler. And it made me realize, like, wow, you know, this life, we got to be appreciative for what we do have and don't focus on the things that we don't have. And if it's something that you really want, you got to work your butt off to get it. There ain't no other ways around it. Mm. And it led me to wanting to help other people because so many people always reach out to me to like, Eric, how can we help you? And that's what led me to starting a foundation.
Oh, okay. You're blowing my mind right now. Mm-hmm. So what you just did was, because everybody should be hearing this, this man has turned his life around from a very difficult time, but the fact that you still feel so blessed and that you load yourself up with gratitude, it's all perspective in life. It's not the events of our life, it's the meaning we take away from them. And it's not, it's easy for me to say, but you're doing it, you did it, right? And so before we move off of that, like, I just want to acknowledge the power of what you just said, because it's very easy to say when you read it in a book and all this says, hey, load yourself with gratitude, feel blessed. It's completely different that when you're heading to the NFL, you end up with the spinal cord injury. There's some things in your life that will never be the same again. And yet you're able to find more than people who can walk around every single day, things to be grateful for, things to be blessed for. And I just think you're remarkable for doing it. But I believe you're right about it too. Like I agree with you. Talk about the foundation real quick, because you've got some events coming up too and stuff. And you know, if you want, I feel like, before I ask you that, let me ask you a question. It just occurred to me. In some way, this difference you're making in the world for the people like you've just described, but also for the people listening to this that are able-bodied and they're just going through a rut or can't turn things around or feel like there's too much adversity or they're stuck. In some way, do you think that's why this happened?
Yeah, I truly believe in life reverse off, that everything does happen for a reason. Mm. And like I said, I was put here to do other things than playing a game of football. Like I said, be that mentor, that coach, that inspiration, whatever it is, the way that somebody wants to put it or whatever title they want to put on it, mm-hmm. for another person to see. Okay, he's in, and I feel like if in life, if I can get out there and be out there and touch other people and see that, if people start looking at things that way with a sense of being grateful and being and have that gratitude for the moments in their life, it's just a lot better place. Instead of just, you know, looking on the things that we complain about, it's like natural for us humans to look at the bad and start complaining. Oh, I gotta do this, I gotta go here, this happened to me here, what am I gonna do, blah, blah, blah. If we could look at it and realize, actually fortunate we are to have these things, or being able to meet this person or go here, be a lot better place. And that's how I kind of just look at life, and I smile at this, because people are like, that didn't get you mad, that person said that, or you did that, and that didn't get you mad, like that didn't frustrate you. It's like, whatever, if he going through that or said this or that, if she said that, and they're a lot worse off than I am. So that's kind of how I look at it. And if I can help somebody that believes in me and what I'm saying, I think that's what it's about. I think it'll put us in a better place.
Yeah, you're doing it right now. You're helping millions of people change the way they think, give them a different perspective, the lessons of turning things around, the lessons of overcoming adversity, the lessons of mental toughness, the lessons of gratitude. Millions of people right now are hearing this, and I'm grateful. It's like, you've inspired me. Like when so everybody knows, he had emailed me because we had known each other, and I immediately, when I got it, I called you, said, I know who you are, you've inspired me, you're coming to do my show, end of story, we don't even need to talk. We talked for like a minute, I'm like, it's done, you're coming, we're gonna do this. Like I knew immediately because you've inspired me. And I'm talking about all the way back to when the injury happened. But what happens is, usually these things are news and then the world sort of moves on.
Exactly.
And so I haven't moved on from you. I don't move on from inspiring people. There's power that when you first have, but I think there's even more power nearly a decade later to see the things that you're doing. Just talk really quickly so they know about the foundation. How do they find out about your foundation?
Yeah, so I partnered up with the Christopher and Dana Reed Foundation, and it's all about today's care, tomorrow's cure. And we're gonna find a cure for paralysis. Mm. One day we're raising funds for that. And I was able to form Team LeGrand, and we've been able to raise over $1 million. We started in the fall of 2013. That was when we birthed it, and now here we are, and we crossed over that mark in 2017, going into 2018 of $1 million. And now we got to get to $2 million, because I feel like when Christopher Reeve passed away from an infection, the thing that kind of spinal cord injuries went in the shadow. When I got hurt, I feel like I was past that torch. Mm-hmm. It's your time now. His goal was to have a world with empty wheelchairs. I'm trying to use my platform as much as possible to raise that awareness for people for that. And we're doing a great job with technology now, 2019, I truly believe in my lifetime, you know, if I'm blessed to live many years, we will find a cure for the paralysis. And it's also about raising money. And that's why this year will be our 9th year of doing my 5K walk and run. And that each year we raise over $100,000 for that event. Yeah, it's amazing. It's a big party at Rutgers Football Stadium. We come out, everyone have a barbecue, a DJ, some of the just sponsors are amazing for that. But just over 1,000 people come out and they walk, they run, and they bring their friends, they bring their family, bring their dogs. Everybody's welcome, and it's just a 5K walk or run. And after that, we have a big barbecue party afterwards, and we raise over $100,000.
And you've raised totally over $1 million. You know, everybody too, the reason it's so important to raise money is there's this revolution happening in stem cells. And the more and more you read and understand what the future can be in stem cells, you do know, like, this isn't just something people are saying, that there could be a cure for paralysis. There really can be. Mm-hmm. And we're getting closer and closer, but there needs to be more money. Probably the pathway to that is the stem cell path. Mm-hmm. At least some people believe that. Do you believe that too?
Stem cell, epidural stimulation, what the Reed Foundation is working on.
Yep.
Whatever it is.
Right.
I'm trying to support that. And it's because you know, you see these stories and you see these situations, but if we can look at this one day, like a common cold and get, or a torn ACL, and if rehab, you get people back to living their life, that's what it's about. I think about that and I envision that. Like one day, oh, boom, you go in there and the doctor doesn't have to come in and tell the family, your son is paralyzed, he'll never walk in, never do this. All right, your son got paralyzed, but hey, we can do this treatment and through, you know, a heavy rehab and extensive, he can get back to the life that he once was living. That's how I envision it, and that's how I want other people to envision it. You just got to raise awareness, and unfortunately this happens, but it takes the funds to have those clinical trials and things, and it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to do my part and raise that money to help other people.
I love you, and I love that you're doing that, and I love your vision. Now that conversation you just mentioned where the doctor comes in and says, hey, your son's not going to walk again. I'm curious. I want to ask you, because I know you're real about this stuff. Over the last 8-9 years, it's been going, we're in the 9th year now post your injury. There's been dark times for real too, right? So what are some of those times? What are the difficult times like for you now? If you're being transparent, you know, what does that look like for you now? Because everybody has down days, down moments. What's it look like for you?
Well, I sometimes sit up in my room and say, I want to go out to lunch. I got to call, hey, can you bring me here? And you go there. Say I want to go out on a date with a girl. Mm-hmm. Got to call, say, hey, you think you can get off so we can, you bring your girlfriend, we can meet up with this one. I want to talk to her. Those are hard times because I can't just get in my car and go and do for myself. Mm-hmm. Having to rely on people all the time, it's believe me, I'm very blessed. I'm very fortunate. I do have those people. But it's rough because sometimes you just want to do what you want to do when you want to do it. And I just can't do that. And it gets frustrating at times. And you sit there and you're like, wow, why can't I do this or why can't I do that? But I try not to stay in those moments.
How do you get out of them?
I think, honestly, I think of the people that don't have them. I think about the people I've met along the way that I know that go to rehab and then just go home and they sit in their room and that's it.
So you feed yourself gratitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Feed it all the time. All the time. I'm sitting there like, wow, you don't get down with this. Focus on something else. Start doing this. Start betting yourself here. Start looking at this. Or even if you want to watch something on TV, take your mind away from those moments, you know. Read a book. You know, stuff like that. You just take your mind away from it and realize how actually fortunate you are. Yeah, those, you get out of that funk actually pretty fast.
That's huge, because what happens is when we get these moments, we just start repeating the thought over and over and over again. So anything you can do to remove the thought,
exactly.
If it is a book, if it's, you know, get outside somehow, if it's, even if it is diversion of music or TV, something to get you out of that repetitive thought. And you're all listening as you do it. You get a worry, you get a problem, you just repeat it over and over and over and over again.
That's what happens.
That's what humans do.
It repeats it, or it bothers you and irks you. And if it's something that bothers you that much, then you got to take the effort to change it. You know, you can't live it alone. You got to change it. And then another thing that actually got me this past year, I haven't told many people about it, but I wasn't healthy, not knowing. I was coughing a lot. Now I realize why what's causing this cough. I'm thinking, is it my heater I'm sitting by? Is it the water I'm drinking? Is it, is it the styles? I didn't know what it was, but I was coughing. Come to find out, just last week, I went to the hospital finally to get some tests. Come to find out, I have severe sleep apnea. And I wasn't, and this is what was causing, I was not getting enough oxygen to my lungs at night, which was already, my lungs are already impaired from the injury, so they're not fully expanded, so they were getting even smaller and smaller, and it was trapping the fluid that you get, and you know when you cough, it was getting stuck in there and causing pneumonia. I had pneumonia twice last year. Come to find out, it was just all because of sleep apnea. I didn't know what was causing this, but I finally did a sleep test. And the doctor's like, you stopped breathing for a half hour total last night, and you only slept for 4 hours. And I was like, what?
Wow.
So now I got this mask, and I'm a new man.
Are you really?
I'm getting this oxygen down to my lungs. I'm waking up. I was falling asleep during the day 3-4 times a day. Not realizing, because I was waking up so many times at night.
Wow.
I was tired the next day. Now, I feel like I go all day. I feel like a new man with this.
Yeah.
Kind of mask. Kind of sucks at first, but wearing it.
Right.
I'm starting to get used to it for a week, and I've ever had it in.
You spoke earlier about technology too. So these masks have helped you. Also, these students at Rutgers, which we're going to show some of this B-roll too. But see, everybody needs to get this. Like, the reason that there's collaboration in the world. I don't care what you're doing is when you get people who want to support each other, that love each other in the world, miraculous things happen when humans come together. That's what I want people to understand. Listen to this again. Miraculous things happen when human beings come together to do good for each other. Isn't it true?
That is so true, man.
And so tell them a little bit about what these Rucker students did with you. This is awesome.
So right? The way I use my phone, I have a bracket that hooks to the arm of my chair, mm-hmm. and I Velcro my phone to it, and I put a stylus pen in my mouth, and I can do everything. That's how I text. That's how I go on my email, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I Snapchat, whatever. I do it all with it by my face, but I used to always have to hold the stylus pen in my mouth. Mm-hmm. Just sit there when I'm out, used to watch the TV, holding it. After a while, I get annoyed, I just drop it, and then if I want to use it again, I got to call somebody to get it. These Rutgers students came up with this little 3D model where I can connect it to my bracket, and I put a little, there's a little hole in it, and now I just drop my little stylus pen in there. I can keep my mouth from getting dry all the time and being thirsty. Mm-hmm. Isn't that life, little things, life changer.
Yes, life changer. They also did a drone too. Well, by the way, we're feeding this in. If you're watching YouTube, you're seeing this right now, but also then they build a drone that you use as well.
So now there's a drone and you can use, you go on your phone and use it as an app and you can fly your own drone. And I actually just started my own YouTube channel, so I can't wait to start doing videos, flying my own drone around in a neighborhood and doing some cool stuff with that, using it for my events, like my walk. I have a flag football tournament, using it for that, getting some great shots from there. So incredible things, like you said, when people come together to do good.
And that's eventually going to lead to a cure. It's the same principles. When brilliant people get together, good people and a good cause, you can't believe things. So just so you know, like I just found this out today. He and I text often, and I never thought about how quickly you're getting back to me. But now I know these people have created this device where you're doing this with your mouth. I'm like, it's another thing in life that just removed this burden from you and other people. And I want everyone to understand this. Like if people can get together and do this for him, what could you be doing collaborating where you live? Ask for help. Get together with people. Common cause, common good. You'll be amazed at the power of, we call them master minds for a reason. When you get more than one mind together working towards something, it becomes a master mind. It becomes a third mind. And you're a testimony of that. So there's so many things I want to cover with you. And everyone's, you know, obviously been taking notes and they're inspired right now. But
I kind of want to tell a funny story too.
Yeah.
It. Made me think about it, you know, when people come together. So when people first come up to me, even already on that mic.
Yeah.
Comes up to me, you go to shake somebody's hand.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm out there, it happens to me all the time. Of course, I cannot move my hand right now to shake it. People come and they put their hand out and they leave it there. And I'm like, no, go ahead and shake it. And sometimes they don't understand what I mean. I'm like, huh? I'm like, go ahead and shake it. You can grab, go ahead, you can shake my hand. And they're like, what? No. I'm like, I can't shake your hand. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. But I'm like, no, it's fine. Then you get people, after I had a few,
yep.
They just come up to you and they're like, shake your hand. I'm like, go ahead and shake it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I can't shake it. Like, why won't you shake my hand, bro? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I literally can't shake your hand. No, you won't shake my hand.
Hello.
And stuff like right. that. It's so funny. So I love when those moments come out. My friends live for it because then at the end of the day, they just grab their hand and they put on their hand and then they understand, like, oh my God. I'm like, don't feel bad. It's all good.
This is another key with you, though, and your mom. Humor's helped you through all this, too.
You gotta laugh at the stuff, you know, that happens to you, around you. It gets you through life, and just laughing is good. Laughing, and I laugh a ton of it. I scare my nurses all the time. I jump at them, make noises, and it cracks me up, you know, so.
You just have this spirit. Everyone's watching this. They can see it on your face. Like, the Lord doesn't give us things in our life that he doesn't think we're capable of handling. And it's the people that I've met that have had, you know, difficult issues, whether that be Israel or Nick, who's been on my show, or Cody, who had his legs amputated when he was a young man. In your situation here with the paralysis, it's amazing to me when I've met these people. It's almost obvious when you meet them that they were already capable of handling this. They just didn't know it. And that's another lesson for people listening to this. You're capable of handling things. You're so much more resilient and tough and strong and determined and resourceful than you think you are. And when adversity strikes, trust me, you're stronger than you think. And people like Eric prove that every single day. Let me ask you a couple things as we finish, because I'd make a huge mistake if I didn't give people the gift of this. And I ask guests this often, but you're special in this regard. Someone's watching this, they're going through a really difficult time. They're going through the worst time of their life. At any given time, if there's, you know, 10 million people listen to this. There's a million people listening to this right now. Like, look, I'm going through a real bad one, right? Really bad one. What would you say to them? What would your advice be to them?
My biggest thing I always try to tell people that I'm going through a rough time or dealing with some adversity, First off, don't run away from the adversity. Hang the lit face on. You run away from it, it's going to haunt you, and you're going to deal with it a lot longer. Mm. Look for the solution. Handle that adversity, whether if it's you're diagnosed with cancer. Do the treatments that you need to. Get on it aggressively. Do your research. Don't. You're going to have that sulk moment. Okay, you can sulk for a little bit, mm-hmm. but you got to handle those moments. And I try to tell people, I know you may have it bad right now. You may be going through this, but there's always somebody out there that has it worse than you. Mm-hmm. And if you can remember that, mm-hmm. you really got to, all right, I got to pick it up. Mm-hmm. I got to pick up. I may have it this bad. I may be just lost my job. I may just lost my family. I may just got paralyzed. I may got this. Somebody always got it worse than me. Somebody's homeless. Mm-hmm. Someone's bedridden. Someone can't do that. If you start looking at life like that, then you start doing the things that you can do, and you become a lot more appreciative of what you do have. Mm. And you don't focus on what you don't have.
Mm. Boy, I'm not adding anything to that. It's too good. I'm really grateful for you. I really am. Like, you know, you inspire me. And this is the beginning of something bigger between you and I. I'm also, by the way, I scratched that. This is something bigger. I'm not going to go where I was. This is going to be the beginning of something big between you and I. Let me ask you last. You know, when you're going through a difficult time like this and you were laying there on the field that day asking to be taken, at what point and how important has been a vision of your future been for you? In other words, like right now, this vision you've got, have you always through this, you know, the darkness and the difficulty and the problems that's always in our faces, right? Mm-hmm. How important has like a vision of a better future for you been for you?
As you go through those dark times, you sit there and you close your eyes and you vision of walking again. Mm-hmm. You vision of going here and sharing your story. You vision of helping this person or another person. Then once you start visioning it, you try to live it. You do the things that you need to do to live it. I was able to start a foundation. Mm-hmm. I was able to start a motivational speaking career. Mm-hmm. I was able to do sports broadcasting. And the last thing I was really, you know, happy about, I started a show with Fox Sports. It's a digital platform called Mission Possible, where I was approached by a group where they said that they want to have me as a host of a show, where I go into people's lives that are dealing with some type of adversity. And we bring them around, people that give them a cool moment, but also shed light on their story. And Fox Sports gave us the opportunity to do 6 shows. And we were able to go into other people's lives. And you always see somebody, you know, like on ESPN or something, sharing the stories, the host. You'll never see somebody actually going through it. Mm. And when we were able, I was learning so much from those 6 people that I was able to do. Working with, we did a Boston Marathon survivor and a WMPT, where she finished the first WMPT who finished the Boston Marathon. We brought them around the New England Patriots and they sort of jelly practice. They got to meet Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, everybody. We had this guy, Jeremy Thomas, who was born with spina bifida. He's a rapper and a Miami Heat wheelchair basketball player. We were able to go down to Miami, take him out on a boat around Miami. At the end of the day, we went on to the Ballers premiere. He met The Rock and everybody, Ace Hood. It was really cool. Stuff like that. Mm. Using my connections, my platform. I was able to do it. I want to be able to do season 2. And I'm not going to lie, right now we're just looking for a sponsor. Mm. Get that sponsor to do season 2. It's going to change a lot of people's lives.
There needs to be a sponsor for season 2.
I can't wait to show you that.
Yeah, I can't wait. I want to see that. Please show me that.
Yeah, it's actually on foxsports.com/missionpossible.
Okay, you're going to show me one-on-one.
I'm
going
to show you.
I want to tell you something about you. And by the way, first, thank you. There's millions of people that are grateful for you today. But I want to tell you something about you. You inspire me. Legitimately, you inspire me. Like, I'm so grateful we did this. And the man you are, I want to be more like. And you're making a huge difference in the world. And from laying there on that field that day to today, in that 9-year window, the difference you've made in the world, the millions of people you've inspired is impressive. But I'm telling you, the next 10 years is going to be a completely different level for you. And I really feel like all these visions you have are going to become a reality. And I want to be here to help you with them. And I know the Max Out Universe is behind you too. They're going to be following you on Instagram. They're going to be subscribing to your website. Hopefully many of you, if you can, will get involved with this foundation and just follow his progress, because I have a feeling someday you're going to hear and see all of the things he's talking about during his lifetime come to fruition.
I truly do appreciate that, because that's what it's about. Like, I follow when you say max out.
Yeah.
It's all about maxing out, reaching your full potential, going beyond that, somewhere that you couldn't think that you got, but just having the confidence to do it. Mm. That's where it all starts. You get the confidence to do it. What can hold you back from what's possible? Just a simple message to you. I was sitting there that night, and I'm going through. I'm like, all right, how do I want to, reach out to Eddie? And I said, you know what? I'll just DM him and see if he answers. Now look.
Boom, here we are.
Months later, we're here doing this.
I'm so glad you did. I'm so glad you did.
Take that leap of faith. Just take that step. And I truly believe it's amazing stuff going.
I think it's interesting that you use the analogy of take that step, because you literally have done that. And it's people would think that you don't anymore, but the fact of the matter is you've taken huge steps in your life since that moment. And so this is a man who in his life right now can't yet walk again, yet he takes these huge steps towards these massive goals and dreams. And I'm so proud of you. And I'm grateful that everybody's been introduced to you today. So thank you so much for today. I feel like it flew by, but I'm grateful for it. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you so much. And look out. I'm working on my second book right now because I want to talk about the mental toughness of life. And I think if people can really get that mental toughness, it's gonna be a great life for themselves.
Well, they're gonna get it from you. And so please follow Eric on Instagram, everybody. And lastly, I know you're following me. If you watch this, if you're not, follow me on Instagram, turn your notifications on. Just remember this every day. I bring you the most inspiring people in the world who are maxing out. This man right here has maxed out that moment of October 16th, 2010 to this moment. You've heard how he's maxed out his life. And I know that you're so, you know, engaged in the program and you enjoy it. Please make sure if you're listening to the YouTube that you go on the audio platforms like iTunes and subscribe. If you're listening to this on audio, go to the YouTube channel and subscribe as well. And every day on Instagram, I run the max out 2-minute drill, which basically means this. It's really simple. I want to engage with you further. I want to introduce you to people. Would you do a coaching call with one of my guests?
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
Okay, awesome.
That would be awesome.
So you get a chance to get coached by Eric, my other guests, myself. Here's how it works. Every day on Instagram, max out 2-minute drill. When I make a post in my main feed, and I post between 7:30 Pacific time a.m. and 8 a.m., which is also 10:30 to 11 Eastern time, right in that window, I post the same time every day. When I make a post within the first 2 minutes, we'll give you leeway up to 5 minutes, make a comment, and we pick a winner every single day. If you miss the first 2 minutes, just make a comment on every post, because I also pick winners who comment anytime on any post any day, as long as it's every day. And lastly, I'm picking winners who comment on people's comments. And you can win max out gear, coaching calls with guests, coaching calls with me, my book, tickets to see me speak, all kinds of cool stuff. So engage with me, turn your notifications on Instagram. And again, share today's program. I know you know people who need to hear this man's story. He's gonna inspire the world, and you can help us do that. So please share the program. God bless you, and max out.
This is the Ed Milet Show.